Dearly. So I learned that the last time church was on Christmas here at Sojourners, they canceled service.
Did they really?
Then like one of the lay people was like, "Hey, you know, can we still meet? Will anybody like come and teach the Bible to us?" And one of the guys was "All right, I'll come in." And so the lay people like initiated a meeting and still got together.
Good for them.
Pastors.
It was like 6 years ago that this happened, where it was on Sunday. J.D. Greer, I remember J.D. Greer canceled. And
Kevin DeYoung, baby.
Kevin DeYoung did that article.
Yeah.
Which has been, he actually read that article in a podcast recently. But he did that, and people came unglued on J.D. Greer for it. And I noticed J.D. Greer announced that they're doing it again, I think. But
wow.
So what if we do an episode then, we'll call it our annual Wassel episode, and we'll talk about like, should churches cancel? And then on the other side of that, like if you've got family in town, if you've got Christmas plans, should you choose between Christmas Eve or the worship service, and which one should it be and why? That should occupy about 3 minutes.
Pastor discussions. As a pastor, do you schedule things around so that you can be out of town if your family lives out of town?
That was gross, Corey.
That's why they canceled
right
here last
our
year
ear.
Or last time, because the pastor's families were out of town, and so they were going to visit their families.
See, and that's
like, that's part of the cost of being a pastor, bro.
Yeah,
you don't.
I know.
To be
I never leave, and I kind of like it because I don't like my extended family very much. So it's kind of a good excuse. We don't have to go to my in-laws.
This is good stuff. We should definitely be recording.
This is going to be at the opening.
I think too, like.
That's why I had babies 5 years in a row, so I could just clear my schedule.
I would love to talk.
Sorry, we just.
I would love to talk. Not as much as about the question of, do you pick Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? Because I think that's an easy question. Like, you go on the Lord's Day to church. That's why we're still having church. But I would love to maybe even tweak it a little bit and talk about like, do you go to church with your church family or with your biological family? Because that's what we have a lot of people gone on our Sunday morning service, because they're at church with grandma, whatever, because they're sentimental. You know, like, how do you relate to blood family versus church family, the family of God? I think that might be an interesting spin on it as well.
That would be interesting. Listening to the Pastor Discussions Podcast, a roundtable discussion about doctrine, faith, and the Christian life with John, Corey, Cal, and Tyler. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pastor Discussions Podcast. It's a roundtable discussion with four pastors from the Midwest about doctrine, faith, the Christian life, and everything else in between. So this week is our annual, I guess we'll start an annual Wassel episode. It's our annual Christmas special. We'll call it Christmas special. That's how we'll do it. And
I was waffling.
Wassailing. Wassailing. It's different.
Waffling sounds better.
Waffle House is where you go a waffling.
This discussion is brought to you by Will Benton's 1980s era.
This discussion is brought to you by Wassail House. What is wassailing singing? I think it is, right?
I believe it is.
Yeah.
I believe it's like caroling, and they really did. I don't, you guys probably don't remember this, but there was a Claymation Christmas special, Will Vinton's Claymation Christmas, and they had the California Raisins on one of them, but that one of the shorts that they had in there was that they had waffles, and he was like, no, it's not waffles. It's wassail.
My favorite Christmas song is the one that every impetulant child reenacts throughout the year, which is bring us figgy pudding. First of all, figgy pudding must be amazing. And second of all, the tone in which that young man demands the figgy pudding for coming and singing is a little bit out of control. That kid needs a spanking. We won't leave until we get some.
Figgy demands.
Yeah, he's a Figgy terrorist.
Result in Figgy corporal punishment.
Anyway, happy Christmas, everyone.
Google says that Wassel is like apple cider. Sorry.
Wait, this is drinking? Like, here we come, a drinking.
I was trying to find it, too, but no, there's also another entry for it where it says wassailing falls into two distinct categories, the house visiting wassail and the orchard visiting wassail.
Yeah. So it's food.
So you can
offering a drink from the wassail bowl in exchange for gifts. So you bring the apple cider to the house.
Oh my gosh. And, that seems like so much work.
And they give you food.
They clearly didn't have young children. Can you imagine carrying a bowl full of hot apple cider with a bunch of little kids to somebody's house?
Can you imagine what we'd be talking about now if you had known what wassailing was in the first place?
Apparently, you would go into the orchard and recite incantations and sing to the trees to promote a good harvest for the coming year.
Really?
Whoa. So don't sing that in church.
Okay.
No.
So if we use the first
special better.
If we use the first definition though, can we bring wassailing back? Can we make wassailing great again?
Wow.
Nobody does it. Let's bring it back, bros.
I'm wondering about something you said. You know, that seems like a lot of work. Making the stuff and then the drinks and then carrying it over there. There's a lot of work in Christmas songs. The 12 days of Christmas.
I know.
That's a lot of work for my true love.
And you know what? The true love apparently loves poultry because there's a lot of poultry in the 12 days of Christmas. A
lot
too.
Of poultry.
Like my wife would be keto. Happy about five because day five, because it's like five golden rings. That's it. That's all she'd be into. You give her 12 turtle doves or whatever. Nope. Not happy with that.
No, it's a very keto based song.
Actually, the story behind it is it's a guy who's trying to get his fiance to break up with him. He just is too cowardly to break it off on his own. It's a Hallmark Christmas movie. Is that too cowardly to break up with her?
In ways,
so he escalates the
original
Christmas
How to Lose
gifts.
A Guy in 10 Days.
Yeah, the original How to Lose a Guy in 12 Days. It culminates with a bunch of birds.
Day, how to lose a listener in 10 minutes.
Have you guys seen, I think that's one of the best episodes of The Office where Andy is secretly doing the 12 days of Christmas for Aaron.
She's
like, please stop whoever you are. the geese are pecking at me. I've had enough. That's what I think of whenever I hear that song. So anyway, so let's talk about Christmas. In fact, this year is kind of interesting because Christmas Day falls on a Sunday. So we talked about this in the Practical Shepherding cohort a little bit, but how should we think about Christmas when it comes on a Sunday, or how should we think about church attendance when it falls on Christmas? Maybe we'll put it that way. So at Arbor Drive, we are doing a Christmas Eve service as per usual, and then we're going to do our Christmas day service, which it really is just another Sunday worship service, but it'll be our Christmas Sunday worship service. So are all of you guys, first of all, are all of you guys having worship services on Sunday morning on the 25th of December?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Just making sure we're all on the same page on that one. Liturgical Yoda there is not having Christmas Eve service. So why is that, considering that you love the church liturgical calendar so? What made you guys decide to not do a Christmas Eve service?
Because I don't like Christmas Eve.
Ladies and gentlemen, the hot take express.
I was kidding. We love our Christmas Eve service, and I'm kind of, you know, I went back and forth on whether or not to do it this year, and I think a big part of why we're not doing it this year is just because of its proximity to the Lord's Day. You know, if I had my way, every year we'd do Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and then regular Sunday morning service. But I don't get that. So I don't think anybody else would be there with me. So
you might be surprised.
When I think about like what to prioritize, it might be surprised. But when I think about what to prioritize, and I think about like we have a good portion of younger families in our church who have Christmas stuff with extended families going on, it seemed like I didn't want people to have the, like, do I go Christmas Eve? Do I go Christmas morning? And think of it that way. I wanted to really put the emphasis on, we still have the Lord's Day. And it's still, we observe the Lord's Day weekly, regardless of where it falls on the calendar, mm-hmm. in terms of whatever else we might celebrate. And so I think we're going to kind of incorporate aspects of, that we would normally have in our Christmas Eve service into the Sunday morning service. So it'll still have that feel, but it'll just be on the Lord's Day. And so we'll gather and celebrate the resurrection of Christ as we celebrate the incarnation of Christ.
All right. So I'm going to push back on that, because you just said something that, that I find interesting. I want to understand this. So what, if you're having the worship service on the Lord's Day, which is on Christmas Day this year, and not having the Christmas Eve service because you want to make sure that you're not causing a conflict and that the Sunday morning worship gathering is occupying its proper place, why then are you changing the liturgy of Sunday morning and of the worship service?
Yeah, well, we're not going to change the liturgy that much, but we're going to incorporate some things that are apropos to the season that we're in.
Okay. It's not, you're not
we're not going to throw out the preaching of the word for the sake of,
so you're not smashing like Christmas Eve and a worship service together. You're just utilizing Christmas themes throughout the regular liturgy. Is that right?
I probably will preach shorter. Okay. Because I've been preaching on the mystery of the incarnation leading up to Christmas. And so we will probably, I'll give an exposition, a shorter exposition on just the birth narrative itself. And that'll give time for more singing, which normally the Christmas Eve service is a singing heavy service. Mm-hmm. We do a carols and lessons kind of service. And so, so I think we can incorporate those in without just chucking the liturgy out altogether or anything like that.
Okay.
We'll still have Lord's Supper, because that needs to be celebrated every week.
Yeah, you got me there. Touche. See, we all have our areas where we're working. All right, Corey, what's your guys's plan for this weekend of Christmas joy?
Well, I mean, I put most of my energy into planning Sunday, so I haven't even started planning Christmas Eve, even though, yeah, we like it. We'll do it. But
can you be a little bit more enthusiastic about that? I mean, we like it. We'll do it, I guess.
I am not ashamed of the Christmas Eve service, for it is the power of God. It's fine.
If the listeners could see Cal's face right now, he just hijacked Romans 1:16-17 and applied it. Oh, that's funny. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
There's some people that feel that way about Christmas Eve services, but no. This Sunday is really important. There's no biblical command for us to have Christmas Eve services, but there's a pretty clear biblical precedent for gathering on the Lord's Day and making that important, and focusing on the resurrection and the gospel. And so, we're fully prepared for the fact that we are going to have families that are absent because they're traveling, right? And we probably will have families absent because they feel like they put their, they came to Christmas Eve services the night before. And that's not what I would pastorally recommend placing the primacy on, but we are going to have we normally have a pretty intentional fellowship time built into half hour before our worship service starts, so we are going to have a bit more of a elaborate breakfast at 10 on Sunday morning, just to encourage more people to come out and really make it special, even though it might not be special in the traditional way that they might be used to celebrating Christmas, mm-hmm. We're just gonna try to do it and make it as special as we normally do. And that might mean it's a little bit more low key than usual, but that's okay. I still remember the last time I was in ministry where Sunday was Christmas Day. There was debate in advance, particularly some of the people that would have been
involved in executing the service had family responsibilities elsewhere and wanted the day off, you know? And so, you know, they were like really strong about wanting to cancel the whole service. And it is one of the leaders, you know, was speaking into the conversation, and he said, you know, holiday means holy day, right? But like, it's kind of the point, you know? And so we gave that gal the day off and worshiped without her. And so I think that's the honoring thing to do. It's the most sensible thing to do in my estimation. So that's what we're going to do.
All right, cool. Cal, what about you?
Yeah, we normally would do a Christmas Eve service, but we are not going to do one because of falling Saturday night before Sunday morning church. So that's really why we're just not doing it, because of that. After talking with leadership, we just made that decision.
So two people that hate Jesus's birth, and then two people that love
Christmas Eve services. I love Christmas Eve services.
Us smaller churches would probably have a Christmas Eve service if we had enough, you know, volunteers and things. Not all of us can be a mega churches like John. So if we were, we probably would still do a Christmas Eve service.
That is true. That is true. No,
if we could do everything like John, we would. Yeah.
Well, maybe not everything. No,
we know you would.
Yeah. We're not doing Christmas Eve. We're not doing Christmas Eve. We are going to do Christmas morning at our usual time, which we meet at 9:30 in the morning, and we don't have Sunday school or anything, so we have nothing of that to think about moving. I will preach a little shorter, and we will have more music than normal. Okay. That's kind of the plan, is to make it last about an hour. We typically only go about an hour, 15 hour and a half anyway, probably, which was probably pretty short, but we usually only do like four songs in our service. So I'd like for us to do more, but we just don't. So that's where it's at right now.
Okay.
And then after that, my family and I get in a car and drive for like 3.5 hours. So.
All right, cool. So we're going to do Christmas Eve service, and we're going to do Christmas Day service, I guess. We're just going to do this gets into one of those things. Like if I had my druthers, I know Tyler and I are probably going to disagree on this, but if I had my druthers, we would just continue on with the next text. And there wouldn't really be a deviation from that. I know that Tyler is more of a fan of the liturgical calendar, and I get you're bringing me around, man. Like I see the merit of it. I see the value of it. And yet the other thing that I see that sort of conflicts with that is, like on Easter, for example, like we make it as though, we don't celebrate the resurrection every time we gather. And in a sense, it kind of devalues the other, Lord's Day gatherings throughout the year without really intending to or meaning to. So, for us, one of the things, I'll preach a little bit shorter. So we'll go 40 minutes instead of 45, you know, but we're going to have a normal liturgy in our worship service. So, with thinking through that, would you say, so let's take this from two different angles. Let's take, first of all, from the angle of the person that comes to two services a year, right? They come to the Christmas service, the Easter service, and that's it. Do you do anything different on a Christmas service because of that? And the other angle of that, the other side of that would be, is how should Christians think about, coming to a worship service on Christmas Day, right? So I'm thinking in particular, we talked a little bit about beforehand, but I'm thinking in particular about the family who has family in town, or like Cal was saying, has to be somewhere later that day. Do you just take the Christmas Eve service if it's available and do that one and call it good? Or do you make the worship service on the Lord's Day the priority if you have to choose one? So let's kind of take those two. First, let's talk about is anything particularly different in your worship service on Christmas Day, or on your Christmas worship service? considering the fact that you're going to get people there that are maybe two a year attenders. Tyler, what about you? I'll bite.
So I think the both those questions are kind of actually interconnected and reveal a sentimental view of church attendance. You know, the CEO Christian, so to speak, is largely attending Christmas and Easter out of sentimental cultural reasons rather than any kind of conviction of what Sunday morning is actually about. And I think in the same way, someone who says, well, if I go on Christmas Eve, that counts, is really looking at, you know, I went to church this week. I checked off the box. Like, they may have better intentions in their heart than that, but like, that's in effect what they're saying by saying that, right? Like, there's nothing distinct and particular about the Lord's Day and the Lord's Day service. And so it really collapses back fundamentally to a sentimental view of church attendance is just part of culturally what I do. So I'm not particularly concerned about someone coming, you know, on Christmas because that's the one time of year they attend church. I'm concerned in the sense of I'm happy to have someone who doesn't know Christ there and I want them to hear the gospel plainly, but I'm not doing anything different because we have young people in our congregation every week who need to hear and confess Christ. And so regardless of whether we have visitors or not, we have people who don't know Christ in the congregation, including some adults, I'm sure. And so I'm not necessarily doing anything different because I'm not targeting them and trying to rope in someone who tangentially interested in Christ into coming back next week because they really had a great time. It's like, no, I want them to hear the plain truth of the gospel, and I want them to hear enough that they can come to know Christ. And I want the Spirit through the Word to do the convicting power in their hearts. So that's maybe a longer answer than you were looking for, but.
So it comes down to that conviction.
How about, I was going to pass off someone else, but go ahead.
It comes down to that conviction that the worship gathering on the Lord's Day is for believers, right? Like you're gathering, you're not gathering as an evangelistic outreach. You're gathering for the corporate worship of the risen Lord. And so therefore what happens there on those days on the Lord's Day is explicitly for believers. And so that does not change because it's Christmas in your view. Did Tyler just freeze?
As an evangelistic outreach is the, oh, did I?
You did. You start that sentence over again.
It said my connection is unstable on my back. Okay. I was just going to say, I think using a holiday service for an evangelistic outreach is a strangely Western thing.
It is. Yeah. Okay. So, Cal, what about you? Would you change anything for the unbeliever that might show up?
No, probably not. I tend to take seriously the whole thing about preaching the gospel and that I think that the Bible points to Jesus. And so I just accidentally unplugged my headphones. Sorry about that. Boy, we're doing well with our technology right now. Sorry to those listening. I just apologize for that. And it occurs to me that you didn't know my headphones unplugged because my microphone was still fine. Anyway.
It would have been fine if you
were not doing anything different. Now when I do Christmas Eve services, those are usually different. I'll use some video elements and different things that I don't normally do in a worship service during a Christmas Eve service. We do candle lighting, things like that. We have not talked about doing anything like that on Christmas morning. We might bring the candles out and do a candlelight thing because we're not doing a Christmas Eve service. But other than that, it'll be, you know, we're going to sing more. And I'll preach a little shorter, but other than that, there's not going to be that much different. What I don't want to do, I do not want to be that church that does, hey, we're doing big stuff because it's the holidays, and then people come back the next week, and it's like, oh, this is what it's normally like. I want to just be who we are. We're not, you know, there's that old saying, whatever you win them with is what you win them to. And I want what they're one to be the gospel and to be Jesus lifted high. So that's what I'm doing.
Sounds good. Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much the same. I mean, like, on the one hand, I don't want to be oblivious to the fact that it's Christmas, right? And we're worshiping on Christmas Day. So I think, like, on the one hand, I'm going to be sensitive to the fact that we live in a culture that's celebrating this time of year. And so that, you know, that's going to play into it. I'm going to be conscious about, you know, the fact that it's highly likely we'll have visitors, you know, that are going to be related to my congregation. And I don't know where they're at spiritually. So I might spend a minute or two here and there on all kinds of different, you know, application points that might hit that, you know, that segment of the congregation, but it's not gonna change, you know, the way I've, you know, it's not gonna change what we're preaching and how we've organized the service largely. And so there's that. And then I think on the question of like how to encourage people when they're deciding about whether to come or whether to prioritize Christmas Eve or give primacy to Christmas Eve over Sunday morning, you know, it's like, I think you know, to tether it to a text, you know, you've got passages like Hebrews 10, where it talks, you know, do not neglect, you know, to meet together, you know, as is the habit of some. So on the one hand, like you look at a text like that and you want to avoid legalism where there's this rule that you, like you can never break or that that there's no excuse, right, for missing church or something like that. On the other hand, though, right now, I think we're just kind of in an evangelical culture that likes to use legalism as a justification for it, basically just being spiritually lazy. And so, you know, so we want to say, oh, yeah, we're not coming to church on Sunday morning because, you know, it's legalistic to insist that we'd have to, you know, it's okay to miss church once in a while. It's just like, well, yeah, nobody's actually saying that it's not okay or that there aren't reasons to miss, you know, to miss a Sunday here and there. What we're saying is like, prioritize what seems to be normative, you know, in, you know, the New Testament church life and, you know, and do that if you can. And so, that's probably how nobody's asked me this, you know, like nobody from my congregation has asked me, hey, should we come on Saturday and not on Sunday? Like they don't, most people don't ask me stuff like that.
They don't want to hear the answer.
What's that?
They don't want to hear the answer.
Probably not. Yeah. or they just don't think it's any of my business. You know, yeah. I mean, most people, they don't, I mean, they make those decisions on their own and they wouldn't think that, it's any of my business to weigh in on stuff like that. So, but if they did ask, you know, I would say, you know, what seems to be the normal picture of New Testament church life, you know, and it's gather if you can, you know, if you're not kept from it, well, why talk yourself out of it?
Yeah.
So that's kind of my approach.
I just can't think of a better way to celebrate Christmas than worshiping Christ with God's people. Like, you know what I mean? It seems like a counterintuitive thing. We'll go on Christmas Eve. That way we can have Christmas, you know, like, what do you mean? And that's what
I know.
That's what I was trying to get at with the sentimental view of, right. Like it's the family memories, tradition and things like that, that make, you know, and you see that in movies when they talk about the true meaning of Christmas. Right. And it's, you know, push back against materialism, material things that are not the true meaning of Christmas. Family and traditions and closeness and kindness are, while missing Christ, right? and so it really is. Corey was talking, I, you know, one of the things you've mentioned, Corey, is not being oblivious, and it reminded me too, which I think is a good point, right? Not being oblivious to some of the just differences inherent in services around this time. The first year I was here at Sojourners, I was unprepared for the fact that the Sunday that fell near Christmas and the Sunday after Christmas were probably like completely different congregations than what I was normally preaching to. because, you know, half our people were gone other places with family members, and then half our people had family members that came and joined them. So I was preaching in continuity in sermon series and relying on the congregation to have had some prior teaching already on this. And then I'm like, oh, wait, this is an entirely different, like, here's half the people that don't know what we're talking about. And so yeah, just having to take into account that, that, that sermons around this time have to be at least a little more able than normal to stand on their own without any prior hearing of the previous week's sermon or something like that. Yeah. So that is one difference that I do take into account.
That could be a problem. That could be a problem any month of the year on in, you know, in some of our churches. I mean, I was actually talking about this on a Sunday. You know, I was preaching from James and so, you know, navigating and being patient in trials was the subject. And so for an illustration, I jumped into Psalm 73, you know, and just talked about how, hey, David, you know, the psalmist was perplexed by these things too. He was perplexed by the prosperity of the wicked. And then in Psalm 73, verse 16, it turns and he talks about how, you know, it was a wearisome task to try to figure this out. But then he says, until I went into the sanctuary of God, right? And so the application there was like, okay, folks, like, and I, you know, I quoted somebody else as a, you know, as a reinforcement. And the quote was
not C.S. Lewis.
Not C.S. Lewis this time, no. But the quote was basically just this idea that, you know, we really, as Christians, we derive a lot of power in our week from the reality of having been in the presence of God on Sunday with other believers. And so it's not really just Christmas time, right? Like, the fact that Christmas falls on a Sunday this year, it really just brings to the surface an existing problem that we have all year round. And it's that we don't really believe that something truly important and real is happening when the Lord's people gather in faith to worship the Lord in faith and sit under his word in faith and sing his word in faith and pray his word in faith and partake of his word through the Lord's Supper and baptism. And, you know, we just don't think something truly, really awesome and spiritual is actually happening every Sunday. And therefore, all year round, the Sunday worship service is not prioritized like it should be. And I think we would see a lot more power and influence in Christians' lives year round. I think I might have said this once in one of the podcasts that didn't get recorded. not blaming anybody.
There was only one.
It was just the one.
Okay. There's just the one.
Was that goodness? If as Christians, literally all we did was just tried to like prioritize attendance and worship every single week through the year, I wonder how much better off our culture would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that ties back to what we talked about with the social imaginary too. Like, there's invisible things that you can't in our Western impatience, you can't measure in a week or a month or a year. It's measured over a lifetime. And we are very quick to say, well, you know, it's just once. It doesn't really matter. And I'm not saying that, like, I'm going back to what you guys are saying. I'm not saying that there aren't legitimate reasons to miss the worship gathering on the Lord's Day, right? Like, I've missed because we've been on vacation and we've been traveling on vacation. I've missed because I've been in the hospital and been sick. Like, there's legitimate reasons, but the normal rhythm of one's life, it's much like working out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't, you don't go to the gym once and walk away all jacked and look in the mirror and be like, oh yes, results. That's awesome. And it's very easy to be like, well, I'll just skip today. And then what happens is that becomes a pattern and the exercise is not happening. And when we're talking about this whole thing, what we're talking about is that there really is something happening under the surface that you can't immediately measure that is beneficial for you and that is going to have long-term impact as it is done over and over as God ordained for it to be done. You know, that's the thing I think underneath the surface that lends itself to people saying, well, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It's, you know, they don't view it as something that's happening that is actually special. When it really is special, like Christmas worship on the Lord's Day, when it happens to fall on Christmas, is literally no more special than worship on the Lord's Day in the middle of September.
Mm-hmm. Or the previous week, right?
Yeah. Or the previous week. There is nothing that sets it apart and makes it more or less significant or important or special. It's exactly the same, even though the emphasis of the songs or the emphasis of the sermon might be a good yearly reminder for us of the incarnation and the impact of the incarnation in the world and in Christians. Mm-hmm. But the service itself is doing what the same thing that every other Sunday worship gathering does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think too, Corey brought up Hebrews 10 earlier and, talking about do not neglect gathering together as is the habit of some. The habit of neglect is easy to observe in some because it happens repeatedly, right? It's a fully ingrained habit. But I think the inverse of that then is that our habitual response should be being together with God's people on the Lord's Day. And then the times we miss are an exception rather than a rule, and in a rare exception that then weighs on us. So when we have like times like this where our cultural calendar, and in many respects, because Christmas Day is a very culturally celebrated thing in the Midwest, particularly, right? You go and be with family and you do family things and you eat together and whatever. And it's wonderful. It's great. But like when that cultural calendar conflicts with the habit of gathering together with God's people on the Lord's Day, there should be more than a mere passing, like, oh, I guess we, you know, can't go this year because it's on Christmas, right? Like the default then is kind of revealed. And I think that we, by default, operate on a secular calendar that includes Christmas because it's still part of our culture, rather than on a liturgical calendar. And that's where I think the liturgical calendar is helpful. It's aligning us with the idea that every week we gather and celebrate the resurrection of Christ. And then what marks out times in our year as special and significant is not whatever culturally we've decided to celebrate. It's the life of Christ, right? So his birth, the Annunciation, looking at celebrating his life, and then time leading up to his death, and then celebrating the resurrection, and then the 50 days of Pentecost, and all those kind of things. Like they're marked out by Christ's life, which informs our calendar and our time rather than culturally. And right now, because we live in a culture that celebrates Christmas remains there. And so it may seem more important for Christians, and may actually not be because of Christ, but because of just cultural influences. And I think that's revealed when these conflicts come up.
But I would even say there's the cultural calendar, right? There's the Christmas thing, right? Like the cultural calendar of it's all about being with family and everything. But what we're doing is we're neglecting God's calendar that he's given us of a pattern of every 7 days gathering on the first day of the week to worship. And so when you put it in those terms, like one is very quick to disregard God's calendar for the sake of the cultural calendar. And that's where the danger is, I think. Go ahead, Cal. Mm-hmm.
No, I wanted to say a couple of things. One, if you're listening to this and we don't want you to misunderstand what we're saying. If your family lives 3 hours away, 4 hours away, 5 hours away, whatever, and you live in another state, and you are going to go see your family for Christmas and you're going to miss your home church because you're going to be a state away, that's okay. We're okay with that. We would encourage you to go to church
with them.
Your family. Yeah, we would encourage you to go to church with
unless
your family.
They're Methodist, ELCA.
you went the other way. I thought you were going a different way. So I would encourage you. You know, gather with God's people on Christmas Day. where you're at. So if that's your local church, your home church, do that. If you're off visiting family, do it there. That's fine. I would say that I would echo a lot of what these brothers have said. You know, John, I think you said, you know, there's nothing more special about Christmas being on Sunday rather than any other Sunday. Being that it's all the Lord's Day, and we're called to worship Jesus on all of those days. And I would agree. And it doesn't bother anybody else. It doesn't bother most people who will miss on Christmas. Doesn't bother them to miss any other Sunday either. So, or at least they don't. I don't anticipate anyone coming to me and saying, "Hey, do you think it's okay if I don't come to church on Christmas?" I don't think anybody's going to come ask me that. Because I think people have already, unfortunately, decided what that is. And I think that it goes back to those causes that you guys all mentioned, that ultimately we don't understand that it's really something special that happens, that there's just as much of the power of Christ here when we gather and worship with 35 people as there is in a church, you know, in the Chicago suburbs that has 2,000 people. And there is just as much of Christ's power and just as much of his spirit there among his people. And it's every week.
Yeah.
And we need it as Christians. We need it for that long-term growth that you were talking about, John. We need it for that fellowship. We need it just to make it in our world, especially now. You look around, you're like, man, things are really dark out there. And, you know, I've said this before. People are like helium balloons. And if they're not tied down, they float away. And part of keeping us tethered to I'm not saying you can lose your salvation or anything like that, but part of keeping us tethered to the faith, to the discipleship life is that constant reconnection with the church. And what better time to make it a priority over, you know, your family opening their presents, which, let's be honest, most families that have small kids, they're going to have all the presents open by like 6:30 in the morning. So I
plenty
mean,
of time to still come to church.
Our kids will open their coal and be crying. Church. They'll even be done crying by 9:30.
Yeah. So it's a bit frustrating, not angering or anything like that, but it's a bit frustrating to me because I want to believe that people who claim Jesus as their king would feel that worshiping together on Sunday, any Sunday, is that much, you know, I would hope that they would hold it in higher regard for what happens during worship. And then also, I would hope that if they see a greater importance on Christmas Day, if they look at it and they go, well, it's Christmas. I mean, we celebrate Jesus' birthday. They're like, yeah, that's when we celebrate Jesus' birthday. Then why wouldn't they be more likely to come to church then? But they aren't, for the reasons that we talked about. And so I think that's very interesting. And I think that's why a lot of churches that have primarily younger families just say, you know what, stay home with your family. We're canceling.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, COVID-19. We can't say that word or we get like
Rona
in our analytics. Sorry. The
China virus.
Yeah. Because of that, the pandemic, unfortunately, it's become easier for people to stay home.
Yeah.
Even from churches who have church, because they're like, oh, well, I'll just watch it online while we're in our jammies drinking our hot chocolate.
Kung flu. By the way, the Wuhan...
Is that acceptable?
The Wuhan lab leak is not a conspiracy theory. It's actually a viable option now. So the only difference between a conspiracy theory and reality is 6 months to a year. So kudos to everybody who's been holding the line.
This podcast is also sponsored by QAnon.
Dude, don't do that. Don't do that part.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I agree with what John just said. Don't do that.
Yeah, I do too.
Oh man. Okay, so like going back to what you were saying, Cal, like I think that there's something that low evangelicalism has lost in valuing and understanding the role of the ordinary means of grace. Like that's not something that's spoken about. In fact, even just, I mean, this goes all the way back to, you can go back to the Ten Commandments, where we see a command to rest that God has given, that people like to just jettison as if, you know, well, that was important for people back then, but not today. There's this history of understanding, kind of like what you were talking about with, you know, submitting to King Jesus means actually submitting to his word. And when he says things, they're for our good and they're for our benefit and they're for our blessing. And so to do them is an act of faith, trusting that God's way is better, that his design is right, and that blessing and joy come from obedience of faith. Right. And so, like, for people that are weighing this out, the question that I would ask is, like, what's the primary motivator that's causing you to consider not showing up on Sunday morning to worship with God's people? I would be willing to bet that you feel as if you're going to be missing out on something, that there's going to be some downside, some joy lost, some memories not made, and all of that. And the question is just really simple. And it's like, do you actually, I'm not saying this in a condescending way, but do you actually really believe that God has designed us to function a certain way, and that a primary transformational avenue that he has created is these ordinary means of grace that he calls us to do week in and week out, and that those actually do have an effect of bringing about joy as they're done in the obedience of faith, right? Like, those, that to me is a bigger question. I can make up other stuff. Like, I can, you know, like, I can figure out a way to make Christmas memories outside of the worship service. You know what I mean? In fact, as a parent, what I want is, I want my children to have memories of the fact that God and the gathering with the saints was the primary focus, and took a place of primacy in our home and in our life, and that we ordered our lives around that versus something else, like Tyler was saying. But even with that, I can make up memories outside of that, you know, like I can yeah. figure out ways to gather with family and friends and celebrate. And even if it's not on Christmas Day, you figure out how to do that. What I can't do is, I can't replace the gathering with God's people and the ordinary means of grace that God uses through that.
Mm-hmm. And I think still, it goes to just echo off your point there, John, diagnosis, like, what do you need more?
Yeah.
And I think we're poor at diagnosing that, because I can see, you know, I mean, we have a lot of young families in the church with young kids, and Sunday mornings are hard. Mm-hmm. And so it may feel like what you need more right now as a family is to, you know, stay home, have a relaxed morning, eat breakfast together, make some good memories with the kids, watch them as they enjoy their gifts, and, you know, go over to grandma and grandpa's house later in the day. And just, man, what a special Christmas. And that would be great. We're not denying that kind of thing is wonderful. But the need that we have as God's people to, having been united with Christ, and we are truly then his body, and we cannot say to the other parts of the body, we have no need of you, then what you actually need is gathering with God's people, being reminded of the truth of the faith and what you believe, even though by gathering, you're probably going to have a more stressed morning, and you're probably going to go then to grandma and grandpa's house in the afternoon feeling totally worn out. And in the near term, it may seem like, man, we really made the wrong choice, but I don't believe it is. Like, it's clear from God's word where he has caused those means of grace to flow through. And it's through his word proclaimed, it's through his people gathered together. It's through the gift of the Lord's table together, like all those things.
Yeah.
We need to convictionally believe that is true. Because often, like, our circumstances, when we weigh the calculus of just what we see, it doesn't seem like it's true.
Yeah.
I think another sort of offshoot of this, or not really an offshoot, I think it's part of going back to that larger symptom, is people don't want, you know, you talk about the ordinary means of grace. that's boring to people. You know, they're like, oh, that sounds so boring. Like week in, week out, the same thing.
So ordinary.
They don't want to be people. Unfortunately, people don't want to be boringly orthodox, you know,
orthoprax.
And I think more of us need to be just boringly orthodox, because what happens is they want to be exceptional. Everybody wants to live on the mountaintop, always have the big experience, the lights and the smoke. And I'm not just talking about physical lights and smoke, but also the experience of, you know, the ooh and the wow and the.
Our Instagram culture encourages that too, right?
Exactly. So, I was going to say TikTok, but you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Think about that with the Israelites. So they had that, and how long did that last them? Right, like God is going before them in a pillar of smoke and fire, and you don't get much more like experiential than that. I mean, God is literally dwelling in a tent among them. And then they're like, it'd kind of be nice to go back. I know we get manna every day, but it'd be kind of nice to go back to Egypt.
That manna is so boringly ordinary.
It's so boring. It's the same thing every day. And it kept them alive.
But hey,
it's okay. I want to hear what Jesus said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they were like, you know, surely if someone raises from the dead, they'll believe, right? And he said, somebody raises from the dead, they won't believe. You know, like, I mean, all the way through, you have it in the Old Testament, you have it in the New Testament, you have all the way, and we see it today.
It's also the point in Hebrews 3 and 4, right? Not everybody who was under the cloud is not united by.
Yeah.
Well, and you see the same thing with Christ feeding the 5,000. It's like, oh, this is an amazing thing. Yep. This is an amazing miracle. And then they're like, I thought you were just going to keep feeding it. Okay, well, let's go home now. You know, and he turns to his disciples. He's like, you guys want out too? Now's your chance.
I was just going to say, this is why we'd rather watch The Chosen than read our Bibles.
There it is.
We'd rather watch a TV series written by a guy who doesn't know the difference between Mormonism and Christianity. And then we would just, sit through our ordinary Bible reading.
I need to get that organ sound effect up and running. Preach it, brother.
Oh. And I have no problem with somebody watching The Chosen. Like, I don't care. It's fine. Like, I have literally no problem with somebody watching it. It's just that, like, we have to recognize that the kind of people we are is we tend to be, you know, more interested in you know, quick emotional highs and being kind of, you know, impressed by spectacle than we do by sort of the actual power that comes from a steady diet of God's word. And so,
illustration.
I think we need to.
Illustration. Does anybody remember what that life-changing movie / small group study was from like 4 years ago that was just going to revolutionize your church? Do you guys remember what that one was? Yeah, I don't either.
I hate those kind of things.
I doubt that anybody that went through it remembers either. Because it's like,
started coming up with them in my head. I'm like, that was like 15 years ago.
That's just like, we'd like to jump from one thing to the next. We want whatever the next hot thing is, as opposed to the steady, minuscule, small. Like, I was telling everybody at our church this last Sunday, it's like Joseph like got up and left and went to Egypt on very little information. Right. I mean, he did not have this whole thing worked out. He just up and left. The path for obedience for Joseph to be able to do that big thing was forged in 1,000 little things. Right. It's like he was a righteous man. And so that ordinary obedience that seems so ordinary is actually really extraordinary. You know, you were going to say something, Tyler.
I think,
despite our best efforts, there was an awkward pause.
I'm going to say, I don't know. trying to remember what I was going to say.
It was something about The Chosen and about Corey was talking about The Chosen, how he hates Jesus films. And,
yeah, that's right. I remember, Second Commandment guy.
Yeah, I know.
I prefer my films to be thoroughly pagan.
I like my Jesus to be Middle Eastern.
I did watch The Chosen and actually enjoyed it. There's a beautiful scene in there where he quotes Psalm 2, and it is wonderful. I was just thinking we have to learn to train or learn to build a self-awareness of our own inability to really determine what we actually need. Mm-hmm. And I think because, you know, the idea of I would rather do X than read my Bible, it is built on the assumption or like I need X right now is built on the assumption that we are good to judge of what we actually need. Which really neglects our fallen nature, right? And yeah. Like, no, the flesh is waging war, and the flesh says, "Entertain me," and the spirit is crying out for living water. And so, thinking about like, there's just massive implications for the fact that Jesus came when he did instead of now, because if he had come now, we could have, you know, his sermons on YouTube, and like, how amazing would that be, right? Like, we could see. You know, and that's why he says at the end of John, you know, you believe and you see, good, but blessed are those who believe without seeing. There's something unique about the word given to us, by the eternal word, and now inscripturated and then proclaimed and read among God's people. That's, what we need to come to know Christ and come to behold him. And we just neglect that for the sake of all kinds of other stuff, because we think that that's actually what we need. And we're just poor judges of that. And I think we've just got to realize that we're poor judges of that, and then trust that God's word, what it says we need is what we need.
That's an outstanding point. Like that maybe wraps everything up, but it like tidies up everything that we've been talking about so far, because all of what we've talked about has had underneath its surface some form of self-deluded autonomy that sees ourselves as the best. I mean, we are very much like children. I know what's best for me. I don't want to go to sleep. And the parent is saying, no, like, you really need sleep. I can tell that you need sleep. You might not want sleep, but that's what's best for you right now. And what do children do? They fight that.
I want to add explicitly too, because it can sound like, well, we're pastors, and so we're telling you what's best for you and what you need. And
we
like,
do no, it too.
We're fellow sheep that do it as well. That sit down and are, you know, staring down the barrel of some Bible reading and are like, I'd rather, you know, read a blog or watch something on YouTube or whatever. You know, like I just need a little break right now, or those kind of things. You know,
we need some me time too.
Yeah,
I need some me time. I need some time to me recharge.
I know. You know, I am so. I'm trying to decide whether I want to get on the soapbox or not. Let me put it this way: I am very, 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 very suspicious of a common thread that I've seen among those who have suffered from church abuse, in that the word itself becomes triggering. And they can't spend any time even reading their Bible because that triggers memories of abuse. And so some counselors will encourage them not to read their Bibles because of that. And I think that is absolute things I can't say.
Boo-hockey.
Wow. I'm like trying to think of an appropriate word for it. It is ridiculous. It is ridiculous because this is the word of life. This whole idea of I've been so traumatized that I can't even read God's word. Then you have no hope. I'm sorry. There's no hope for you, because this is where hope is found, yeah. Is in God and his word. And how we know God is through his word, and how we communicate with God is through prayer and to him. And so, so this whole idea of the me time and that kind of thing, and we're poor judges of what we actually need. And God through his word is a much better judge.
Absolutely.
I had not heard that counselors were telling people that or had been told that before.
Yeah, I've heard it said.
That's crazy.
What about I've got all sorts of like church trauma as a pastor. I should probably just
if the word is triggering, John, just tell your congregation that.
I'll tell you, somebody uses that excuse around.
Tyler, please be a little bit more sensitive. At least alert me that you're going to trigger me.
Yeah, people that talk about all their church hurt. Just like, here's some for you, and I'll raise you mine. And like, it's like, I mean, I've been in ministry 22 years, and I can tell you some stories.
But doesn't that go back to the point, though? Like, that's what we need. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, it's, I get what you're talking about, Tyler. And I like, you know, and whatever. It's like this 21st century. We're so emotionally frail and fragile that we have to have all these caveats to everything. But most of what people view as trauma is not really that. It's just people being sinners and needing to repent and needing to be forgiven. And, you know, it's just ordinary
or
stuff.
Or being sinned against and needing to, you know, how many times do I forgive my brother? 70 times 7, right? Yeah.
And what is that? It's God using that to form Christ in us, you know? Mm-hmm. So like the answer is not to run away from the church. It's to lean into the church. And, you know, there's whatever, since we're not talking about some specific instance, there's, you know, just generally speaking, that would be the answer. Well, the same thing I think is true when it comes to all these other excuses we make for why we, you know, I can't be there this Sunday, or I can't be there this Sunday, or this is what's best for me. Going back to what you were saying, it's now maybe what's best for you is what God has explicitly said in his word is best for you. And you just need to act on faith in that.
Mm-hmm. And I would just add, like, we may, you know, obviously we have a sense of like, I'm thinking about, okay, you know, I'm going to be going on sabbatical next summer, and it seems wise to us to take a break at this point. And I think it would be good for our family. That's not explicitly commanded in scripture, right? That's a judgment call. And part of that is we will continue to take part in the normal means of grace of going to church and those kind of things. But like, so I want to recognize that we know, you know, our internal life and the condition of our internal life better than those outside of us, but God himself knows it better even than us. Right. And so we don't know what might be best in this particular situation, but we do have a clear set of commands in scripture about gathering regularly with God's people, about the means of grace that happens when you do, about the way we interact with each other, that standing on those are those commands are firm ground, and hypothesizing about what may or may not be best in this particular situation, we can try to use wisdom, but we're on much shakier ground when we do that.
Yeah. Cool. Any other thoughts?
Go to church on Christmas.
Go to church on Christmas. For the love of Jesus.
On Christmas morning.
On Christmas morning. Yes.
Yes.
Which is what Christmas is. Worship with God's people. And while you're at it, maybe keep doing it.
Watch The Chosen.
And oh, wow. Let me give you something better. If you enjoyed this or found it helpful to you, please share a link to the Pastor Discussion Podcast with all of your friends.
Especially those that watch
Especially those who watch The Chosen and don't go to church on Christmas morning.
Because there's no way they'll be triggered or offended.
Yeah, exactly.
Their tears will lead to growth.
Yeah. So that Chosen comment, like, just as a side note, that Chosen comment, I think, brings up a good discussion for next time, since I think it's my turn to pick next time. But watching as a voyeur versus watching as a critical analyst, like, you know what I mean? Like, what, in other words, maybe discernment going into what we watch. And how we're entertained. I think we had an episode on entertainment.
Is this like I watch Game of Thrones so that I can understand the culture yes, better? Exactly. Not as a voyeur, but as a critical analyst.
Could we poor family guy.
That head would not have decapitated that way. What's that, Cal?
Yeah.
Could we wait till the season of Yellowstone is over before we have that conversation, please?
Oh, see? We're all in progress. Oh, man. All right. On that note, we'll go ahead and wrap it up for this episode of the Pastor Discussions Podcast. Join us next time right here. Share with your friends and go to church on Sunday.